Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a highly respected and heart-centered stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. So here's a few questions for you. What if life could be simpler, with more ease and less effort? The goal is not to just get out of pain. It's also getting back to work, traveling again, going back to the gym, socializing with friends and family, waking up without fear nor dread, spending time doing the hobbies that you love, and feeling safe in your body and in the world. If you want these results and you're tired of where you're at, Jeannie can help you get there. She'll be by your side the whole time, and you'll receive support and tools you need to finally recover from your TMS symptoms. Go to Jeannie's website, that's jeanniecolwin.com, JeannieKulwin.com, and book a free chat with her. I promise that she's easy to talk to, and you'll get a ton of value from just this free call. Welcome back to the show. It is October the 23rd, 2024. My name is Eddie Lindenstein. I hope that you've enjoyed the shows the last few weeks. Some unique interviews have come on. It's been really great over the course of the last month. I went back in the archives from December of 2020, and I put out this edict. It was just a couple days before Christmas, and I said, hey, I would love to interview somebody that I know nothing about, somebody that's recovered, and let's talk for about 30 minutes. So we did a 32-minute interview. This is with Stephanie Monick. And what I really like about this that she struck me as is just a total badass, a boxer. And a lot of what she talks about in this realm is around fear and overcoming fear, doing the things that you want to do without fear. And that is one of the toughest hurdles, that and doubt, one of the toughest hurdles for people to get over when it comes to this condition. So without further ado, here is Stephanie Monick and I from December 23rd of 2020. Let's take a listen.
Yes, Eddie, I am here.
Where in the world are you calling from?
I'm in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Okay, cool. So we're, 2,700 miles apart or so.
Right, it's like 6:30 here, so yeah.
Yeah, a little later in the evening. Well, what do you got going on for the holidays? What's the plan for this coming week?
My parents are coming here.
Okay.
We've been kind of in our own bubble for a while, so no worries there. Unfortunately, it looks like my sister may not be able to join us. She was not feeling well over the weekend, had a fever, and has a COVID test pending. So obviously, if she doesn't get the result back or it's positive, wouldn't be a good idea. So that's where we're at. So small, intimate. It usually is. We don't have a huge family, but it may be even smaller this year.
I feel like this is the first time for us where we're not going to spend the entire day traveling house to house to house to house to house. Because my whole family, I feel like, lives within 10 miles of our house. And so, one of those deals where we're, even though, like, I feel like, well, my brother's got three kids, so I guess he's doing a little bit more of the packing up and going from place to place. But, like, you know, my parents are plenty mobile. No kids in the house, obviously, and they still, you know, kind of insist on everyone coming to them, which is difficult when you've got a lot of children you're packing around.
Yeah.
All the time.
And things that go with the children.
Yeah. I'm looking at this picture. So it's your profile picture on your Facebook account as well as your Skype account. And it is some kind of a title, a championship, something like that. Tell us your background.
Sure. Like the whole thing? Or
Well, let's start with the title thing, just because I feel like it's relevant.
Yeah,
it's what I'm looking at.
So that was in 2019, and I won the Masters division. So that's a boxing division for folks over 35. I won the Masters division world title at 48 years old, and that's what that picture is.
That is awesome. So you're a boxer?
Yes.
How did you get into that? And in addition to that, when did you get into that?
So I've always been intrigued by the martial arts, and then kind of got up the stones to participate in my early 20s, a little bit here and there with, like, this was like pre-MMA, so I'm definitely dating myself. what I realized now, what he was doing was kind of the start of what is now known as MMA. So I really enjoyed that. And then I just, once he closed shop, I couldn't quite find it again. And then, you know, fast forward years later, I see Layla Ali boxing on television. And I'm like, I want to do that. I can do that. I know I can do that. And then in my early 40s, moving to Lowell, going to the Golden Gloves with Dad, seeing that again, I'm like, I can do this. I got to do this. I'm doing it. And that was kind of the impetus. And I started in 2016, and that's where I am now.
That is awesome. I can't ever imagine. I sometimes, if I'm hanging out like in a group setting, oftentimes one of the hypotheticals that I'll come up with, it's just the most creative thing I can think of at the time. But I know I've asked about it a few times, and it's always something along the lines of, you know, if you had to pick one, what would you rather do? Take a unimpeded shot to the face from Mike Tyson, or take an unimpeded sack from Ray Lewis, as an example, not wearing any pads. What would you pick? And almost everybody, I think everybody actually has picked the Ray Lewis sack. And me, I mean, I've always had a, you know, like sometimes, like, especially when you don't expect it, maybe you're in recess or something, like you take like a soccer ball to the face, like in the nose, right at the end of it.
Yeah.
it's the most jarring and tough thing to, how do you even get in the zone of you're about to take a shot? Like somebody is going to punch you in the face. How do you even handle that?
I mean, the short answer is in the moment I don't, because I handle it in advance. I do a lot of behavioral, like mental rehearsal of kind of where I'm at and where I need to be, so that in the moment it's becomes kind of a non-issue, because you're dealing with managing your adrenaline. Like people will say, oh, you just get crazy. Like you just go, and it's not, it's much more controlled, I think, than people like to think. Because, you know, unbridled, just all over the place isn't going to get you anywhere. It's not gonna, you're going to burn yourself out.
What's the rounds, and how long are the rounds?
So in the Masters division, they're 3 2-minute rounds.
Okay.
So pretty short. But I think that, well, at least for me, I mean, I would like to just go back just a little bit before that, because it does tie into your podcast completely.
Yes, please.
So I've been like creeping on you for a while now. I'm a former chronic pain, back pain sufferer that got out of pain. And then this was sort of like the crowning achievement of my journey. So that's why I'm in the group. That's why I know who you are. And so that was the boxing training piece. And when I mentioned the mental rehearsal, that was such a huge part of it, because that was the piece that got me out of chronic pain. Like, I didn't know who Dr. Sarno was. I didn't know what TMS was until after the fact. And then now that I've traced backwards, I'm like, oh my God, it would have been helpful having known that. But at the time, I basically, use the training as a way to decondition myself from like almost fear responses. Yeah. And then as an ancillary side effect, I'm like, my pain levels were going down, and I was like, what is happening here? Like, this is bizarre. But then now, having the benefit of all this time has passed and I can look back on it, I can see where all of that kind of, fit together, so that I was able to do that. And then, and then getting back to your original question, which is about how do you prepare for getting punched in the face? It's really not about that. It's how do you prepare for the fear?
How
do you prepare for being in the fear and not being fearful and fleeing, or having the natural human emotion, which is to contract, move back? How do you condition yourself to learn to trust that you can lean into the fear?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, the thing for me, at least, that was like the magic. That was the magic unlock, I guess, for me.
And did you said back pain?
Yeah.
So when you say that the book and Sarno and that kind of stuff didn't come till later, I mean, when are we talking about in terms of when did pain issues for you begin? Like, because you said that you started. You said the picture was from 2016. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you started doing this in your 20s. We're talking, 20 or 25 years ago. When did pain issues begin?
16. So I was playing basketball and back pain started at 16 years old, on and off. It was very episodic, but intense. And then finally my early 20s. And that's when I was dancing back and forth between, trying to train and then not being able to train. And I went to a chiro, got the MRI, and they were like, well, I think I was like 22, you've got degenerative disc disease and 4 herniated discs and spinal stenosis. And if you want to have kids, you'll probably end up on bed rest, and it's possible you'll likely end up in a wheelchair when you're older. So, and this was like in the, so in their defense, this was the late 80s,
yep,
early 90s, you know, so that was their answer. And then they were like, here, here's some Vicodin, take it by the barrel. Like they pre-opioid, you know, yeah, land. So it was really shit territory to be in. You know, now it's like, you know, I'm, you know, I spend some time in the groups and I'm like, you don't know, you know, when you're like, there's nothing on the internet. It's like AOL with a disc. And you're like, how do I fix my back pain? I'm so screwed.
What was there anything during the basketball that, you know, did you land hard? Or, 'cause you know, some people, yeah, have this moment where they can look and say, like, they have this really definitive period of time where they can say, prior to this incident, whether it's getting rear-ended or it's having a bad fall or it's whatever it could be. And then, you know, boom, whatever it is that's happens, what that's going to happen happens, and you feel completely different. Was it like that for you, or was it kind of like you finish up, yeah, with the workout for the day and then something feels really off?
Yeah, and it really wasn't necessarily a correlation between that working, you know, finishing something off. It was like, you know, maybe I would, like, in the shower, pick up the shampoo upon, you know, standing erect, I'd get the spasm and then the pain. So it's, you know, wearing sweatpants so you can, like, pick your own legs up out of the bed because you can't.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, it's like, take the medication. It's like, I can't move out of the bed. Like, what am I supposed to do here? You know,
right.
It was really nothing, you know, it was nothing definitive. It was just this very overwhelming thing that, you know, it sort of, you know, ebbed and flowed. But when it flowed, man, it was bad. It was funny because on my Facebook page, it came up, this is like the 9 years since I had my second and last back surgery.
Oh, wow.
Surgery this time, 9 years ago. And, you know, it's since then, you know, had all this happened more in the more recent past, I would have been diagnosed with, you know, failed back surgery syndrome, you know. But luckily it was, you know, I was able to carve out, you know, a different path with the help of, you know, it's actually what did it for me was the work of Laura Momosley, those Australian guys. So that's how I think that was like my like major first thing that I was like, oh, now I get how pain works. 'Cause you're not told that, you know, you're not, no one leads you to believe. They're like, if they can't cut it or drug it, that's the only information you're going to get, you know, you're not going to get the other stuff. So I found that on my own, and that was enough to kind of get me on the path. And then the fighting and I struggle to explain it. Because it's a weird thing to explain, but it's the acceptance of fear as normal given the circumstances. And then I realized how much in other parts of my life I experienced fear and didn't even recognize it. It was all repressed. So that, you know, when it's a fight or you're sparring, that's normal. So you give yourself the break to feel the emotion because you're like, duh, someone's going to come and punch me in the face. Of course. That's totally normal. So it was like that. That was the shift. And I was like, if I can do it for this because it's somehow acceptable to me, then make the rest of it acceptable. Like, how can I figure out how to make the rest of it acceptable? All the other things that I go, oh, no, I feel gross about that. So I push it away.
I get the sense, and we're going to go backwards here in a second, but I get the sense that after an experience like that, that you probably even get like a deeper appreciation for your sport.
Because, oh my God.
Because there's so much crossover into life, I would guess, at least in your journey.
Yeah.
Definitely. So you have this set, 'cause I'm super curious in how you get from the second surgery to somehow finding, Mosley. So how, you know, so you have this surgery and you wake up, and I'm assuming the next few days, weeks, months roll on, and either you're not getting better, or you're getting worse, right? Can you give us a synopsis of post second surgery and then to whenever it was that you would have found?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It started in, so it was early December 2019 where this second wave of just intractable pain started. And they initially, I'd gone to the emergency room. I literally didn't even know what it was because it had moved. It was more like in the hip, like more glute med area, but this burning, like cripple walk with the high hip, like obnoxious, went to the emergency room because I didn't know what it was. And they were telling me I had trochanteric bursitis. So then I go home and Google that. And I come across a video of Dr. Ben Benjamin from the Muscular Therapy Institute in Cambridge in a white coat, you know, doing a manual therapy technique on someone treating this condition. And I was like, wait a minute, what is this? Like, who is this guy? And what is this? What is he doing? And then I realized, oh, this is actually more, you know, kind of like a medical massage kind of protocol that I was like, I need to learn this, you know? So the next thing I know, I've enrolled in massage school, as like right after the surgery, and they're like, well, you can't start because you just had surgery and we do hands-on right away. So then I got like waitlisted till like April to start then when I would be fully healed. And then I was kind of hoping that I would like, you know, get my answers. So obviously it turned out it wasn't trochanteric bursitis. It was in fact my back, hence the surgery. But that's what made me realize the pain science curriculum was just, I mean, obsolete, you know, slash inadequate, slash, you know, like all the answers I want, questions I wanted answered, they weren't getting answered. And I'm like, okay, so obviously this is not mainstream information. I need to go find it. Then I stumbled across Larimer's work, and then, you know, bought a few of his books, got hooked on that, and the sensitization of the brain, and David Butler's work, and I was kind of all about it. And then I realized like that whole emotional piece. So Dr. Sarno's work came later, that I was like, aha. And then that was kind of the thing that made me like put, you know, it's like, it's all the same thing, you know, whether it's, you know, if you want to take it's the brain is sensitized. Why? Because it's sensitive. Why? Because it feels fear. You know, why is the, you know, why are you feeling the pain? Because you're repressing something, an emotion. What emotion? Fear. Like I believe it all boils down, like at its most base level, it's fear. It's fear of judgment, fear of criticism, fear of abandonment, you know, all those root fears that we people please and goodest our way through life. And it bites us in the ass, and that's how it does. And I think that, I think that if more people were aware of it, and I shouldn't say that because I know myself, if someone had told me this, you know, back when I was in my 20s, I'd be like, go F yourself, you know, look at my, you know, I know that would have been my reaction. So I'm careful about it, but you know, times have changed and people are more open-minded. And I think that this is really valuable stuff. And your podcast, I mean, I've listened to you on and off for a while. And I think, you know, you guys are doing really, you know, great things with raising awareness and being honest about your own, you know, life shit that probably, you know, causes these things. And I think people need that. They need that someone to look to say, okay, they're willing to put their shit out there. They're willing to tell the truth. They're willing to talk about the ugly, gross emotions that we feel that people don't want to talk about. And that's all okay. And there's a sugarcoating, I think, that happens outside of that, that's where we kind of get stuck.
I definitely hear you on that. One of the sugarcoating things that, and I'd love to get, actually, I'm going to come back to that. Because when you think back to, you know, this long period of time to where you have these back issues, and then you talk about the fear, which I think is really important. In fact, I might even call this episode, Stephanie and I talk about fear, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. But what is it? It's probably not one particular thing, but can you cite some examples maybe of where you think your fears lie or laid at that period of time?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, going back, I think that I had a traumatic event happen as a child that I didn't put a lot of stock into, that as an adult looking back, I realized like, hello, you know, that, you know, it was finally like I was in my 40s when I was diagnosed with PTSD. And it was sort of like, I guess it should have been obvious to me, but it just wasn't. You know, it was like, well, of course, you know, your amygdala is forming. This is a traumatic event. Of course, you're going to have this, you know, kind of fluctuating nervous system that's hypersensitive. And it was like, I get it. But then I think at the same time, if that's what's going on with you, you're sort of left with this, you know, I like to call it, and I've mentioned it in the group, like the, maybe not the TMS, one of the TMS groups. I think that you can, you know, you can take what happened. If you look at, you know, The Body Keeps a Score, all of those, you know, kinds of works like Peter Levine. And it's, sometimes it ends up being this like, you know, you take a shit and then you spend the rest of your life poking it with a stick. You know, it's like, okay, it happened. It happened. There was nothing you could have done about it. Revisiting it 8 bazillion times hasn't worked so far. So you know, you come to terms, you figure out a way to go, okay, let's put that baby to bed. Yes, it happened. This is what, you know, where I'm, what I'm left with. How do I then move forward? I think that people then get stuck in that, like, I need to get to the root of it. And it's like, yeah, you do. You need to get to the root of the fear that's created because of it. But I don't necessarily think, and I'm sure I'll probably get heat for this, but I don't necessarily think it's always about dissecting the event itself. I think it's like, you know, I accept what happened. This is what happened. There's nothing I could have done. This is what I'm left with. Where do I go from here? And that is, for me, was like instrumental in going, yeah, that's probably where a bulk of this came from. You know, what am I going to do about it? There's nothing I can do.
Well, let me say that you should not get any heat for that, because I think that what you're talking about and what you're describing, correct me if I'm wrong, or what it sounds like is, you know, sort of living your life in the minutiae of individual events. It's not really going to serve it. It's not really going to serve you well, both in the sense of, like, you know, being stuck in one place is not making progress. If you're staying still, you're not making progress. But even so, like, if what we know is that the most important thing is to recognize or feel an emotion, like my daughter, when she gets really upset about something, and when I ask her what happened, and she, you know, she'll give me a usually like a very abrupt response. It might be half a sentence. And I think the natural instinct would be, well, tell me more about it, or, you know, give me more details. But instead I say, well, how did that make you feel? And then, you know, she'll say sad or angry or whatever. And that's pretty much all that we need to know. And it sounds like that's what you're describing versus going into the nitty gritty, you know, little minute details about that particular event, which might just cause you to, you know, because you're constantly doing, we talk about PTSD and the amygdala being lit up on this one particular event. I almost feel like the more and more and more and more you need to process, and you do have to go through it, but the reliving it over and over, you're just sort of re-traumatizing yourself every time. Does that make sense?
Totally. It totally does. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're left, okay, here's the result. Here's the fallout. Okay, now figure out what's next. I mean, going backwards over and over again isn't, it just doesn't serve you, I don't think.
How close to being 16 years old was the particular traumatic event you're talking about?
Oh, years. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. What sort of things did you do? What, you know, once you had sort of, you know, come to terms that, hey, this is a nervous system type of a thing that, like, that's going to be the key to me getting corrected or getting me righted, or whatever sort of a term it is that you want to use. What sort of things did you do in that process?
So initially I went to a psychopharmacologist, because I had a parent of one of my students. I talked to me about something that she had gone through and some of the information. And I was like, that's really interesting. And it's weird because I'm pretty, it had to have been I want to say it's just a behavioral blind spot, you know, because it's not like I'm unfamiliar with psychology, or, you know, I've always been very intrigued by, you know, anatomy, physiology, psychology, all those, you know, sciences. And, but for whatever reason, I just wasn't seeing this. And I think that it was a repression thing, but I was like, oh, maybe I should. And then, you know, I remember, like, you know, filling out the long questionnaire of, you know, the diagnostic tool. And, you know, he was very plain about it. He's like, you know, here's what it is. Here's what it is. And here's what you got to do. And I'm willing to, you know, prescribe you medication if you'd like to try it. And I was like, well, I guess, yeah. You know, so he put me on a very low dose. He said, essentially, it was, you know, that you've had untreated anxiety for your entire life. You know, like, this just been run rampant, and this is what you're left with. So I agreed to trial, you know, a very low dose of an anti-anxiety medication. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. It was like, I wasn't aware that this is how, like, you know, regular people walked around. I'm like, and it wasn't like I was like, hey, what's up? You know, I mean, I was totally fine. Like, totally, I felt totally like myself, but I was like, it just took everything and, you know, turned down just a bit. And I'm like, oh my God, like, just even like the sensations in my face, I can't even explain it. It was like, all of a sudden, like, my eyes felt a little bit more relaxed. My face, my jaw was not like, cause I also had TMJ, you know, classic TMS yeah. stuff, you name it. And I was like, this is interesting. And then I got it in my head that, you know, when I wanted to fight, I'm like, it's going to take my, you know, I don't want anything to take off my edge. So I would like, you know, stop taking it and start taking it. You know, I'm very open with people about it. People are like, you shouldn't talk about that. And I'm like, why? I mean, what's the big deal? It's reality. You know, I don't think that there's, I think now society is open enough to realize that, yeah, sometimes people need help, and maybe sometimes that help is chemical, and it's better than self-medicating, which is, and I when I talk about self-medicating, I don't even mean like with drugs and alcohol. I mean, self-medicating with social media, with excessive TV, you know, with any kind of, you know, compulsive sort of behavior.
Yep.
You know, we do that, you know, and even if it's ruminating, even if it's, you know, I do some coaching and I talk to some people about, you know, this like obsessive thought pattern, like where they're just replaying the same thing over and over again. And I'm like, that's an obsessive thought. Like, you have to figure out a way to let that go and put it to bed. And some people can. And if you might need, you know, medication to help with that, then so be it. You know, it's not, there's no shame in it. So I think that people need to, you know, people need to give themselves a break just in general. Like, we're not perfect. We're all not, you know, superhuman. We all do our best, and sometimes our best sucks, and sometimes our best is awesome, but you got to give yourself a break.
Well, and like, I think glamorizing suffering has been, unfortunately, an epidemic in at least in American society. I remember I got an email about, I don't know, 6 to 8 months ago from somebody in Sri Lanka who was talking about just the way that they interpret America, like American lives and people on the rush and go, 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 and constant pressure on yourself and all that, versus, she said, Sri Lankan culture, which is not at all the same. And I think about that kind of stuff a lot, like, you know, the constant pressure of like, this is never going to be good enough, and the Amazon Prime culture of this isn't going to be quick enough, and like just not being able to really ever be satisfied, which I think kind of has its place sometimes. Like, as an athlete, for instance, you know, you do want to be on top, but also that needs to go in spurts, right? That's why you're doing if you're in MMA, as an example, or if I'm like big weightlifting for a meet or competition, like I'm in like basically a 12-week fight camp, and I can go yep. fight or flight for 12 weeks, but then it's chill time for a while.
Mm-hmm. So. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I know, and if you don't get that part right, it could go very wrong. Cause I know my first, like, you know, real, you know, fight was at the House of Blues in Boston. Talk about a pants shitter. I was like, what's happening? No, it's like music and lights and thousands. It was a fundraiser, but it was still a legit, you know, went on my record fight. And I had practiced all this. Like, I knew this was coming. I knew I was going to have the moment where I was like, I got to go,
yeah.
You know? And I was like, I was ready for it. And I had envisioned it a million times. I'd done the mental rehearsal, visualize. And then all of a sudden I'm doing mitt work, warming up with my coach. I felt it, this like storm surge in my chest. And I fled the building. I left the House of Blues. I was in the alley behind the House of Blues going, you know, like literally having a panic attack. I'm watching the cars go by. He's screaming out the door, you're going to get grease on your boots, you know, meaning my boxing boots, because I'm down. And I was like, oh my God. All right. And then, but I knew that was coming. Like, I had already prepared. I had already, whether I could conjure, like, it either came on its own or I would conjure it up. And that's always this thing I really want to hit home for people, is that, you know, you're not going to learn how to deal with your emotions unless you feel them. And if you can't feel them, sometimes you got to force them. You got to force them out. You got to poke them with the stick and go, come on now. I know. And if I couldn't get that like sensation, I know that can come, I would conjure it out of whatever memory I needed to dredge up to get where I know I could go at the night of the fight. I was like, there it is. Okay, now you need to work on bringing yourself down from that. And I had done it and done it and done it and done it. So when that happened, I was like, no, here it is. And I was like, oh no, wait, I have the ability to do this because I already practiced it, because I am the one that's in control of my mind. My mind is not in control of me. And that is definitely something I just think people, you know, miss, or think that they can meditate their way out of or whatever. And sometimes it isn't quite that simple, especially, you know, with, you know, if you've got those issues with anxiety, you have to be able to like lean in and face the bear and go, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to put myself out there and try to survive it. And I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to try to survive it. So then when it really counts, you actually can.
So in closing here, and it might be a repeat of what you had just said, very well could be, but run me through, say that tonight, you're chilling at the house, you're making dinner, whatever, and your back starts to go excruciating, spasm, all that kind of stuff. What is your, run us through what you would do, your process.
The first thing I would do is get myself into some kind of comfortable position. And sometimes it's with my hands on the kitchen counter, like putting, like taking the body weight off my back. Other times I'll lie on my back and elevate my legs on a chair at like 90 degrees. That's just state dependent for me, depending upon where I'm kind of feeling it. But it's essentially something to take that immediacy, that tension, and give the muscles a little bit of slack by reducing the body weight.
Yep.
So that's the first thing I do. And then I start just mobilizing. So if I'm at the kitchen counter, I just start like shifting my weight, like foot to foot, hip to hip, like shaking my butt a little bit. And then the same thing like on the chair, but I'm almost like in a marching position. And while I do that, I'm concentrating on really diaphragmatically breathing and then mentally reviewing what's going on. What just happened? What was I just thinking about? Where was I? Was I here? Was I somewhere else? Was I in this, you know, down this thought pattern that I like to get into? You know, certain, everybody has their pattern, you know, their rabbit holes that they go into. Did I, you know, did something trigger that? You know, what is it? You know, and if I can find that, great. I'll figure out, I'll go, okay, so that's what you were thinking and that's why, and that's something that's been on your mind, and, you know, just figure out a way to let go of it. But I'm always very consciously aware of this is not just about a thinking exercise, because once the pain center, I think, is activated, you know, you need to address that. You can't always just think your way out of everything. So I try to do like the diaphragmatic breathing just to calm myself. And then the movement is sort of giving the message to my brain of like, you're okay. You're okay. You're okay. And that I believe, at least for myself, that the threat that the brain perceives is greatly reduced by me doing something that takes the tension off those muscles, like leaning against the counter or like elevating my legs, because it's reducing the body weight, therefore reducing the strain. So it's just like, we're calm. It's great. We're groovy. Everything's fine. You know, you're just hyped up over this, or you had that bad day at work, or so-and-so said this to you, and you know, that's what it is. And if there isn't anything that comes up, then I just continue with the movements and, you know, positive self-talk, like, you're fine, you're safe, your back is fine, you know, everything is cool, your brain's just, I use the metaphor a lot of like, you know, the brain's like a new mom. If you look at a new mother compared to someone who's got like 10 kids, you know, the mom who's got 10 kids, like, they're fine, everybody's fine. You know, if you're someone with chronic pain or has a lot of anxiety, you've got the brain of like a new mother. Everything's like, what was that?
Yeah.
Oh my God, holy crap. You know, that's just, our brains are looking for, you know, our fear scanners are like, you know, giant satellite dishes. And on regular people, they're just a normal size. And on us, we're like, where's the danger? So figuring out how to like shrink that sensor down, communicate a feeling of safety in the body, having positive self-talk, I think are really, you know, key things to turning down that knob in general, not just on pain, but on all the other thoughts that tend to run us, the obsessive thoughts and the ruminating and the negative self-talk and all that, you know, really inhabiting our bodies and going, I'm safe, I'm good, this is okay, is really paramount.
We are a few minutes over, but I really appreciate you, taking this interview basically on the fly, and then two, kind of running through some of this stuff. I'd love to maybe talk a little bit more in the future. Maybe we do a follow up, you know, 30 or 45 minutes or something like that. And kind of, I'm really interested how this has crossed over and applies into your training, and, you know, maybe diving a little bit deeper into that. But thank you so much for jumping on the line.
Thank you, Eddie. I really appreciate the opportunity.